Today on Movie Rollers, we're going to talk about The Secret Life of Walter Mitty and Saving Mr. Banks. Time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello. We literally can't stop talking about The Wolf of Wall Street.
I was just going to say my burden is lighter since we're able to have spoken about it. I feel much better because I had been carrying this dark cloud around with me for about 2 weeks.
You know, it is hard not sometimes not talking about movies, because I came out of that movie and I was like, to hell with our rule of not discussing films. I wanted to talk to both of you guys, like, what do you think? Because I was really excited.
I couldn't wait until we recorded our podcast, and that's why I posted something on Facebook. I deliberately tried not to.
Me too.
I deliberately tried not to give my opinion on it, but I could not help not talk about it.
Well, you responded to someone, and I saw your response. So.
Did I?
Yes.
But did my response give away what
kind
I thought of it?
Oh. Kind of. Not really, but, okay. You know.
Gosh, anyway. How we torture ourselves professionally.
All for a good podcast.
I guess it does make for a good, healthy debate during the show.
Yeah, and how many minutes did we waste after that recording?
I know. Yeah, I should have actually left it recording and done an outtake for those who are interested. But anyhow, we have two fairly high profile movies to talk about this week. We have Secret Life of Walter Mitty and Saving Mr. Banks. Who wants to? Which one should we go to first?
Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Mm-hmm. Okie doke.
Okay, so Ben Stiller directs and stars in The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, and this is actually James Thurber's classic story of a daydreamer who escapes his anonymous life by disappearing into a world of fantasies filled with heroism, romance, and action. I haven't actually seen the original. Had any of you seen the original?
No, it had Cary Grant, though, I think.
Oh.
No.
Maybe. On the must-do list. When his job, along with that of his co-worker, are threatened, Walter takes action in the real world, embarking on a global journey that turns into an adventure more extraordinary than anything he could have imagined. This also stars Kristen Wiig and Shirley MacLaine. So I have to apologise for my cold, by the way. So if you hear me coughing and snivelling, it's Rashmi.
Danny Kaye.
Danny Kaye.
There you go.
As in the original one, 1947.
Yep. So I would like to watch that, actually. So who wants to go first? Joe, why don't you go first?
Secret Life of Walter Mitty. It's no coincidence that it rhymes with... No, I won't go
there. Oh, come on!
It was just a real disappointment for me. I mean, I think this dreamy stuff isn't generally my cup of tea anyway, but this movie tried so hard to be this big, big, wonderful, warm, fuzzy feeling type movie, but it just came off as a bit of a stalled effort. It just didn't seem to go anywhere that mattered for me. So I think ultimately it fell a little flat. I couldn't keep myself interested. And if I'm totally honest, I had a hard time keeping awake.
I found this a sweet, honest, entertaining film, which it is at face value. And I believe actually it is more than that. It's a rather simple story, like you said, about a man who tries to find himself. And I know this is going to find out the venom. This is going to bring out the venom amongst a lot of people. And this movie has got terrible press. And, I mean, of course, I mean, people will find reason to find this movie manipulative and obvious and contrived. And here's the thing. I mean, either you buy this story or you don't. I bought it. And, it's one of those movies which beats at the same frequency that I do. And I have great, great love for it. I really like this movie.
So on paper, this looks like a film I would absolutely love, like you, Yazdi. A thoughtful fantasy comedy romance. However... spectacular cinematography and great editing are not enough to save this disappointment, like you said, Joe, of a movie. What a waste of time with respect to story. I just didn't get it. I think it's going for sweet and thoughtful, like you said, Yazdi, but it didn't work for me, which is really shocking. Mm. Despite that, I think Ben Stiller's done a really good job of directing, though, and I have to give him props.
So what parts didn't work? Did it seem too contrived?
Yeah, there were some moments of it that just... they just seemed a little too bizarre. The whole, there's a little interaction early on with the Kristen Wiig character where, he just goes into this big daydream about the way he would like to perceive his relationship with her happening. But it never seemed to loop back and close that loop of, you know, now I'm going to use my dream to go and change my life. It just kind of happened, you know, he had this dream and then they went on to the next scene. So for me, I didn't see the point of these big kind of dream sequences, because it almost felt like we were looking at this delusional man, like a slightly insane person, as opposed to somebody who was just a really sweet guy who was trying to make his way in a world that, you know, didn't make sense to him. You know, he wasn't meek enough either. As a, again, I think of these kind of daydreamer type characters as being kind of, you know, wallflowers, very quiet, very within themselves. But again, Walter Mitty himself didn't feel like he ever was that. So it was just too fantastical and disjointed for me. I couldn't really relate or care about him, and without that the movie doesn't work.
I liked him as a character. For me, the disparity between dreamy Walter and real Walter was so big at the start, and the experiences he had through the movie didn't, in my mind, merit the change that came at the end. And so I think that the struggles, this is a transformational movie. The character we see at the beginning is not the one we see at the end. But the struggles didn't merit the change, and it happened too quickly. So I can deal with the fantastical stuff. I like that stuff. I like the daydreamer aspect. I like the fact that he's in his head. I like that he's that way in a world which is not like that. But the struggles didn't merit the change, and it wasn't big enough for the payoff at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the whole movie as this transformation arc. Like, it starts off with this guy who is meek. He doesn't, due to a series of circumstances, he's kind of closed in upon himself. He's not willing to interact with the world. And, you know, for whatever reason, pathologically, maybe he's a little bit insane. He goes into these daydreams constantly while he's awake. And, you know, it takes a series of circumstances then for him to actually come out of that shell. And I know, I even as I'm saying it, it sounds corny, and that's why I think this movie is good, because it's hard to do this stuff without coming off really tacky. And I think it kind of just walks that line where, you know, through a series of real life events, he kind of has to learn to kind of be who he wants to be and kind of, you know, get to a point where, you know, he doesn't need those dreams anymore. And I think, you know, I understand that's a big departure from the previous version of the movie, where the previous version, the character remains a daydreamer through the entire movie. This movie, you know, through the journey he goes through, you know, eventually he doesn't have a need to daydream anymore. And I just liked, there was maybe this should have been a little bit stronger, but the movie deliberately has a very underhanded light tone to it. And I just love the visuals of, you know, this whole Iceland journey he goes through. It's so beautiful. And, you know, Sean Penn is so good in a very small role here. And, you know, the goats and, you know, I don't know. I just lapped the whole thing up.
I mean, I love the cinematography, and that's what I'm saying. It was spectacular to look at. And any one of those frames were photographs within themselves at certain points. But again, Yessi, as you're describing it, I almost feel like it needed more story, and it felt like some pages of the script maybe were like thrown out somewhere, because it felt like it needed a little bit more story to back up that arc, which you're talking about.
As Yessi describes the movie right here and now, that's the movie I was hoping it would be all the way through.
Me too.
Like, at every point in the movie, I was hoping to have these sensations that you're describing, but I didn't. And I just fell out of it. I think it all felt a little too, you know, there was too much kind of whimsy about it. You're saying it had this deliberately light tone. Well, you know, perhaps too light. You know, it didn't grab me, you know, by the heart and pull me through, you know, this character's arc. Because that's what a movie needs to do, at least for me. Especially, and again, I'm not a huge fan of these dreamy, you know, whimsical type things, as you know.
Like Cody Motors.
Or even Midnight in Paris. I mean, not that this is the same movie, but again, when you have these kind of strange, you know, dreamy type things that happen, and it's not necessarily my cup of tea, but the ones that work are the ones that are a little bit more heavy about it, you know, a little bit less subtle, and this was too subtle.
I I think maybe it's a question of sensibility.
It is. It's taste.
There is a great scene in the movie where he shows up in Iceland and there's this drunk man there By the way, that whoever, that character who played the drunk guy, I think he was brilliant.
Yeah.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
There's a drunk guy at the bar.
Large
clearly
guy.
Not.
Yeah,
not.
Yeah.
But he, you know, and this large guy, this drunk guy says, I'm taking off on this plane and I'm going. And this guy's very drunk. And so, you know, Ben Stiller you know, who he is, he's like, no, I'm not going to get on it. And then, you know, he imagines, you know, Kristen Wiig singing this David Bowie song. Right. Which kind of inspires him to go running after, and he jumps on this helicopter and he takes off. None of it should work. It sounds stupid, even as I'm saying it. But in the moment, it really worked. I mean, that this kind of whimsical stuff, off-kilter stuff, is very hard to pull off.
In the moment, for me, it was just stupid.
No, see, that scene worked for me. Like, those scenes, the scenes worked for me. I think just what was missing for me was a little bit more story. And there was no glue holding it together. And kind of almost what you said, Joe, there was nothing to hang your hat on and grab hold of. We had these great little performances, lovely little moments, but nothing kind of pulling it together. Okay, anything more on this one? This seems very quick.
And one-sided. Yeah. Yeah, I can say a few other things,
you
but that's fine.
Say a few and wrap it up.
No, I mean, I just think I like what this movie has to say. And again, I'm trying not to sound like a Hallmark greeting card, but I like that the movie, you know, says that you almost need dreams to stay alive sometimes when you're going through a bad patch in life, and how those dreams will kind of keep you going, and how, you know, it has a very nice commentary about how corporate America has lost some of its soul. And that part, I think, is actually really heavy-handed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, with that whole Adam Scott character who is who's so evil.
He should have been in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah. And I like that it really, ultimately, its message that I took, as corny as it sounds, is that you just have to go out and do your thing. Nobody else is going to do it for you. You have to go out and do your thing. And maybe it doesn't do it the best possible way, but it just resonated for me the whole time. So I'm glad somebody's making movies which are making me happy. It seems to be made precisely for me. And I really want to see the movie again just for its visual splendor. I mean, all those bright colors and the cinematography and the music and all of
lovely.
It is, it's so lush, and there's a lot of thought which has gone into it. So all I have to say is, well done, Mr. Stiller. I give it 8 out of 10.
I think the movie really suffered for me in its identity. I think, you know, it tries to be dreamy, but it's not quite dreamy, and ultimately just felt very, very forced, very flat. Mm-hmm. And the ending, you know, you could see the ending right at the beginning, right? There was no surprises in this particular character's journey. So it almost felt as if they were kind of forcing that ultimate outcome.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to us getting there via this gradual arc. So, and just not a movie that worked well for me at all. I'm going to have to give this a 5 out of 10.
So I'll repeat what I said. I think this is a really stylish movie, and some of the sequences are really beautiful to watch, hence my comment about cinematography. If this had a really solid story, I think this film could have been magnificent and on my top 10 list. There are a few great moments and a few good performances by all, but again, no glue that holds it together. Let's keep Walter Mitty's life a secret and don't bother going to see this one. Plenty of other great movies to watch instead. I'm going to give this one 5 out of 10 as well.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I wanted to come out of this movie feeling the same way that I did when we watched About Time. Remember About Time? When you?
I did.
And I came out of About Time thinking, you know, life and the world is wonderful, and you've just got to live, and you've got to live it and live it fully. And I think that's underlying that's what this movie was trying to get me to feel, but I didn't. I felt terribly bored by it all.
Yeah.
Horses for courses, what we say on Movie Wallace. Well, as from today.
I had the same words in my mind.
Horses for who?
Horses for courses.
What's a course?
A racetrack.
All courses.
Not every racetrack suits every horse.
Right.
Each horse to his own course. All right, let's move on to our second movie of the week, which is Saving Mr. Banks.
So this is the story of how the great book by P.L. Travers, Mary Poppins, almost didn't become the classic Disney movie. It's based on true events. Tom Hanks and Emma Thompson play the lead roles and have support from Colin Farrell, Paul Giamatti, Jason Schwartzman, and Bradley Whitford. And this is directed by John Lee Hancock and written by Callie Marcel and Sue Smith. Did this one make you guys want to go out and fly your kites? Yazdi.
So just like Walter Mitty, I think there are many who are frowning upon this film and they're finding it obvious and manipulative. And I can see why. And I have some issues with the film too. But even then, I think this is a movie I can recommend for viewing to most people. And while there's a lot which I would do differently with this film, I think ultimately the things working in its favor outnumber those that do not.
Joe?
Just a spoonful of sugar. Well, it's more like a sack full of sugar here. I mean, this movie is... it's overly, overly sweet, and manipulative is exactly the word that I used. But it was so enjoyable, and it was such a well-told story, lots of smiles all the way through the movie. I mean, ultimately, I think it was a little too sentimental for my taste, but like you, Yazdi, it didn't stop me from enjoying the movie. It was well-made, well-constructed. There's Oscars all over the place when we, you know, when you think about production design and costume work, and just, I mean, just a really very enjoyable movie experience.
I love Mary Poppins. I mean, no, look, I really love the film Mary Poppins. And so to watch the movie, this movie gave me even more of an appreciation of the Disney classic because it almost didn't get made. And I like that this is the kind of the behind the scenes, if it was a documentary. This film really got under my skin. It had such a profound impact on me emotionally. I could not stop crying. It really got under my skin.
I know what you were saying, and I think there are a few emotional keys it hits, and it'll resonate more for some versus others. I think the single biggest issue with the movie is that it's made by Disney, in that it has a kind of a, you know, the blind side version of the story.
Yeah, it's very reverential.
It's very reverential, yes. And it's very overly simplistic in trying to explain things. And, you know, I almost wish that like a smaller independent studio had made this movie, because I mean, ultimately this is a fairly dark story.
Yeah.
At the back of
it. Yes, it is.
Yes.
It's a very dark story. And to try and fit that in the Disney sugar-coated mold, I think it does a disservice. I think if the movie had a little bit more of a more subtle, more despondent tone to it, I think it would have been more emotionally powerful. Not to say it's not emotionally powerful the way it is right now, but I think my single biggest problem is, you know, with the tone of the movie, because, you know, it kind of takes the Disney taking on this story, and I understand why Disney had to make this movie, because, you know, for crying out loud, yeah, they have all the rights, and Walt Disney is a main character in the movie, so obviously nobody else would have been able to move it. But I think with Disneyfying this very dark story, you know, it kind of comes off seeming too obvious in trying to explain the pathology of why P.L. Travers was the way she was, you know, why she behaved this way. You know, it almost seemed to be, there's almost like a neon sign flashing on the screen, like, this is the reason why, you know, she was a curmudgeonly woman. And I wish it wasn't so obvious in saying, this happened to her in her childhood, therefore she was so miserable as an adult. And it should have been a little bit more, you know, a little bit less direct about that.
So I didn't get that. I didn't necessarily get that. I just came away thinking, what an exceptional example of editing, because you take two different stories that are happening in parallel and one clearly impacts the other mechanically, like how mechanically the story worked. I just came away thinking, this was a really tragic thing that happened in her life. And how she was able to turn that around and come up with the story of Mary Poppins. And then, I haven't read the book Mary Poppins. The only Mary Poppins I know is the Disney version that, you know, we all love and cherish. To have that movie come out of this very sad story, this very tragic life, I kind of marveled at how they were able to make that. The thing that got me was how rude P.L. Travers is portrayed, and Emma Thompson's portrayal of this person is just too much. And I kind of kept thinking, I wish there was something more, that she could be a bit more sympathetic. But then I think if it wasn't for the recordings that you get to hear, and you should stay till the end when you hear the live recordings of her, if we hadn't heard that for ourselves, I would be thinking, gosh, I wish they would have dialed that back a little bit. But the sweet saccharine stuff didn't make... I still came away thinking, gosh, what a tragic life. And how she was able to convert that.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I don't disagree. I just wish it wasn't drawing lines so obviously.
Right.
You know, connecting.
Yes.
This happened, when she was 12, therefore she behaved like this when she was 43, you know, kind of thing, you know. Right. I wish it was
a little bit more subtle.
Yeah, a little bit more. I'll tell you why this movie gives me so much hope is, you know, there's this very small subplot involving her driver, played by Paul Giamatti in the movie. And that's how the entire movie should have been. I mean, it has just the right notes. It has kind of a sweetness to it, which is not overplayed. It does not become very sweet. And I wish that's how the whole movie had been.
Yeah. No, I can see that. I mean, I think this is going to be one that, like you said, Joe, great production, costume, music. And of course, the songs from the movie that we all love to sing and, you know, hum in our heads. I think I hummed for the next 3 days. And just... it all added to so much grandeur in this movie. I felt like this was such a grand production.
It was incredibly well made. I mean, I think from start to finish, you know, right from the get-go, this movie was just, it had this feeling of a movie that had a lot of TLC, a lot of labor put over every single detail. I mean, it was just, you know, it was wonderful to look at, you know, delightfully shot, just very, very high production values all the way through. And I think, you know, that's gonna pay off for them when we think about the award season coming up. In terms of, you know, performances, I think again everyone here was excellent.
Yeah. The Colin Farrell.
Everyone.
Really, I mean, good performance.
This was who directed this?
John Lee Hancock.
And what's he known for? Is he known for anything? Because I'm not familiar with. Oh, he did indeed do The Blind Side.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Gee, I wonder why.
So as I'm looking at this, Snow White, what did he, The Alamo, The Rookie, directed Hard Time Romance. So, yeah, but the production values, I mean, he, you know, and I think maybe the producers in the studio had a lot to do with what kind of resources he was given here. Because, I mean, really, everything in this movie looked spectacular.
Yeah. Okay, let's wind this one up then. So, Yazdi, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I mean, everything I've said up till now may make you feel like I'm too critical of the movie. But, you know, I have to confess that I enjoyed every minute of it, you know, minute by minute. Mostly because, you know, we so seldom these days see, you know, Emma Thompson get a nice, juicy role for her to really, you know, sink her teeth into. And this is a nice, juicy role for her. And I don't know, I just watch... there is a paucity of Emma Thompson on the big screen, and I'm glad this movie fills that void a little bit. And, you know, because the film ultimately, as cheesy and maybe a little heavy-handed as it might be, does have its heart in the right place. So I give it 7 out of 10.
Joe?
Not much more to add to that. I mean, this was extremely well executed. The story was marvelously told and constructed through flashback. And it was overall just a very satisfying movie experience. So... I'm going to give this 8 out of 10. I really enjoyed it. I think everyone should see it.
Yeah, I was deeply affected by this movie because it's core for me. I think this is a story about fathers and daughters and how that relationship can affect every other male relationship in your life. And I love my dad, and so did P.L. Travers. I found the story behind one of my favorite stories unbelievably profound to watch, and I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. I think this is one of my favourite movies of this season. However, I think it may not be the movie you're expecting to see when you see the trailers. Saccharine enough, but be prepared to feel a little sad too. I mean, I couldn't speak. I literally had to, like, get off the sofa and take myself upstairs. I just couldn't speak after I watched it.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't give a score. 9 out of 10.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
9 out of 10.
Wow.
And that's even though Emma Thompson's performance bothered me a little bit. But just for how impactful it was. I haven't been that affected since Wajda earlier in the year.
Did she remind you of a cantankerous older lady in my family? A little bit, perhaps?
Maybe.
Yes. Names will be withheld to protect the innocent here, but... I think maybe like she got under your skin a little bit because there was that same tone of voice that we hear periodically when interacting with my family. All right. MailMovieRollers.com if you think you know who that is. Twitter.com/MovieRollers, Facebook.com/MovieRollers as well. Until our next episode. This was a short one. Too many movies, too little time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.